Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today's Wednesday, April 17th. I'm Stephen Overley. The Federal Communications Commission will vote next week to restore rules that force internet providers to treat all sites equally, otherwise known as net neutrality. And no, you haven't time warped back to 2015. It may feel that way, though, because we've been here before. The battle over regulations for internet service providers stretches back about 20 years. 2015 was the last time that the FCC put these net neutrality rules in place. Democrats were in control then, but 2 years later, Republicans came to power, and the rules were repealed. As a reporter who's been around through this back and forth before, I'll admit to being a bit fatigued. Really? This again? But my guest has been around it all even longer than me.
Fire away.
These days, do you prefer Tom or do you prefer Chairman Wheeler? I know you get that title for life.
As long as you call me for dinner is the line, you know.
This is Tom Wheeler. He was the chair of the Federal Communications Commission in 2015. You know, the last time Democrats tackled net neutrality. Nowadays, he's a part-time fellow at the Brookings Institution and runs a consulting company. While Tom tells me that much of this policy fight looks the same, this time around, there is a big difference. The rise of artificial intelligence. Here's our conversation. Tom, welcome to Politico Tech.
Stephen, it's great to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
Appreciate you being here. You know, the FCC is on the precipice of voting to restore net neutrality rules. Are you feeling any deja vu?
Well, I'm feeling excitement and a sense of finally, because it's been a long time. You know, Chairwoman Rosenworcel and the other commissioners, bless them for moving this forward. It is incredibly important that there be ongoing oversight for the most important network of the 21st century. It's that simple.
This pendulum around net neutrality rules has sort of swung back and forth, keeps swinging back and forth. Democrats put net neutrality rules in place. Republicans kind of come to power and take them away. Has anything changed, you think, since you led the vote for neutrality back in 2015?
One historical footnote to what you just said. The first time that the FCC came to grips with the question of open access to the internet was during a Republican FCC in 2008, when Comcast was blocking and throttling BitTorrent, a streaming service, because it was competitive to their cable offering. I should not hesitate to point out that every time there has been a decision from the FCC about the open internet, the industry has appealed it to the courts.
Right.
And so it's been a constant period of industry opposition.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Your FCC was the first to vote those rules in place and have them stick because the court upheld them after your vote.
That's right? Correct. That's correct. And what we did was we made the decision that that internet service providers giving consumers and small businesses access to the greater internet by controlling the last mile, if you will, needed to be treated as common carriers. And in the parlance, that is coverage of, under Title II of the Communications Act. And what that means, Stephen, is that the companies are required to provide just and reasonable, non-discriminatory access to their networks.
You know, in all of this round and around net neutrality, the arguments about it have not seemed to change a whole lot. Proponents argue that without these rules in place, internet service providers can throttle some websites, give priority to other websites, essentially create this pay-for-access internet that stifles competition. An observation that I have a feeling you'll disagree with. We haven't had these rules in place for roughly 6 years now, and I do think for a lot of people, the internet does not seem radically different. So why does this fight still matter?
Well, I think we got to be careful on what we define as the challenge that we're trying to meet here. You know, the industry wants to define it in terms of no blocking and no throttling. I mean, that is so much yesterday's issue. The broader question here is, will there be an ongoing expectation for all of the activities of this really important 21st century network? And will there be flexibility on the part of the FCC to deal with those? We have a situation where, it's fascinating. If you go back to the Pacific Telegraph Act of 1860, the Congress said, this important network needs to be open and non-discriminatory. When telephony came along, wired voice service came along, it was made a common carrier with the same kind of just and reasonable non-discriminatory requirements. When wireless voice came along, it was made a common carrier with non-discriminatory, just and reasonable expectations. And now all of a sudden, just because we have moved from an analog technology to a digital technology, the companies say, oh, that 150 years of tradition, I mean, always having that kind of oversight for an important network, you don't need to do it anymore, and trust us, we'll be good. The answer is, let's have ongoing oversight. And what's wrong with the expectation that companies act in a just and reasonable manner?
I think it's such an important observation that you just made around how technology has evolved, because even as some of these regulatory dynamics remain the same, the tech is always changing. And, you know, when the net neutrality rules were last repealed in late 2017, no one was really talking about artificial intelligence at the time. I know they weren't talking about it in 1860, you know, so you now think it's a major factor, though. Tell me about that.
It's the point of the matter. This is a history of technological and marketplace evolution, starting with the telegraph, going up through the early digital era, where it was all about video. Remember, the early blocking was about video. Then it became about websites and about apps. And that's frankly what we were thinking about in 2015, because we didn't see artificial intelligence literally just over the horizon. And now we've got AI, and access to AI requires access to the last mile. How can you be a small businessman and enjoy the benefits of AI in your business if all of a sudden that last mile says, oh, no, wait a minute, I'm going to make sure that it has to come to you on my terms rather than an expectation that it be on just and reasonable terms? But, Stephen, the thing that we can absolutely, positively be sure of is this isn't going to stop with AI. All right. Mm-hmm. Neither you nor I. We didn't know in 2015 about AI. We don't know what's coming tomorrow. But we do know that there are basic principles. It is that simple. Do you have just and reasonable access on non-discriminatory terms to the most important network of the 21st century and the ability to deal with whatever technology in the marketplace throws at you in the future?
You've mentioned just and reasonable sort of being this standard. What does that actually mean in an AI context? You know, I know you've written that these rules are sort of a crucial step to preserving access to technology, especially to increasingly important AI technology. Walk me through your thinking on that.
Well, you know, it's not terribly different from what is just and reasonable access in the other contexts, okay? And that is there a fairness? Is there an ability of the deliverer of that last mile to influence or affect your ability to get open access to the technology? It's just that now that open access, instead of being to Netflix or instead of being to some app that open access now is to the intelligence of artificial intelligence. And it's, I mean, it's fascinating. The issues are the same.
Right.
That which is delivered may be is radically different.
You know, I don't think there are very many people who know more about net neutrality than you probably do. It was interesting to me that you've written an article recently for Brookings. You actually asked ChatGPT-4 to answer that sort of question.
Exactly.
What does net neutrality, why does net neutrality matter in an AI era? What did it say?
Well, let me just, I'm going to read you right now what ChatGPT told me, if I can pull it up here and find it. I said, how does AI change the importance of net neutrality? And ChatGPT responded, as AI continues to evolve and become more integral in our daily lives, maintaining an open and equal internet becomes even more crucial. Net neutrality not only supports the equitable development and deployment of AI, but also ensures that the benefits of AI technologies are accessible to all, promoting innovation, fairness, and competition in the digital age.
What did you think of that answer? Were you surprised?
I thought it was spot on, you know? My takeaway from that, and the piece that I wrote in Brookings that you referenced, really was saying, we have a different deliverable, but the issues of that delivery have not changed. They have not changed from video to apps to websites to AI, and they will continue to be the same kind of issues going forward.
You know, both you and ChatGPT, I have to say, have identified competition as kind of a key concern here, and that without these rules, dominant companies will continue to dominate, and that extends into the AI era. What do you see as the connection between net neutrality and how competition shapes up in the AI market, which is still somewhat nascent, but clearly growing very fast?
You know, in my confirmation hearing in the Senate, I said that I had one guiding philosophy, and that was competition, competition, competition. And so the concept of competition amongst ISPs and competition for access to those ISPs and competition among those using those ISPs, I think is essential, and that good policy wants to be encouraging as much competition as possible.
You also acknowledge, and I do think this is an important point here, you know, the leading AI companies are not exactly wallflowers,
right? Meta, Google.
Yes.
Microsoft, Amazon, I mean, have for years now been some of the wealthiest companies in the world. They are now dominant players or emerging as dominant players in AI. I certainly think of them as kind of formidable counterweights to internet providers like Comcast or Verizon. Why does the government need to get involved if this is a bunch of big companies battling it out?
Well, the difficulty is that when the elephants rumble, the ants get squashed. Okay? And so the job of the government is to stand up for the public interest, not to stand by as private interests engage in a Godzilla versus Kong kind of situation. Because I don't know if you've been to see that movie, Stephen, but I saw it the other weekend. And all I can say to you is that Rome, the pyramids, Paris, everybody got destroyed. A solution to how do you protect the public interest in the digital era is not to have Godzilla versus Kong.
I love that analogy, Godzilla versus Kong AI edition. I feel like maybe that's what we'll call this podcast episode, because that's so funny. I do have another devil's advocate question for you, though, and that's one thing we know about AI is that it is going to put greater demands on internet infrastructure, from data centers and networks to the energy needed to power all of it. I could see an argument that internet service providers should be able to charge more for that if it's demanding more of their networks.
So I don't know about you, but when I wanted to increase the throughput to my internet service, to my home, I got charged more. Nothing wrong with that.
I see. So you think companies should have the ability to charge more, but is that just to customers, to end users, as opposed to those providing AI services?
Oh, I see your point. That's a great. So the question is whether you're looking forward or looking backward. I am in favor of the companies being able to charge for the level of service that the consumer wants. But I've got a difficulty when they turn around and say, and now I am running the toll bridge and you got to pay toll to me before you can get to that consumer.
You know, we know that when the FCC votes later this month, Democrats will prevail. They have the votes to make that happen. This pendulum will again sort of take a swing. I'm interested in what you think the FCC should do next when it comes to AI in particular. Is there more that agency can do to sort of put its stamp on AI as it's emerging as a technology?
I think what is important to recognize, again, about AI and the FCC is that the job of the FCC is network-oriented, if you will. Mm-hmm. Its job is to oversee getting a message from A to B. And so there are statutory limits on what the FCC can be doing, but certainly it needs to make sure that there is a fair and open pathway. Certainly it needs to be using the technology itself. And certainly it needs to be saying, what are we doing to promote the ability of American consumers and small businesses to use AI?
You were the chairman of the FCC. Do you wish you had had AI back then? How would you have used it?
Wow. Wouldn't that have been a trip? You know, the fascinating thing, Stephen, is I have enjoyed getting to know AI and for AI to get to know me. I never have thought about that question of how I would have used it. I know how I'm using it now. I use it now to stimulate ideas, to check facts, and I know various companies are using it in fascinating ways. I know of one company, it's a software company that uploaded its entire description of how all of its software works into AI so that now a user can interface with AI and frankly get better answers than if they were interfacing with a consumer rep. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how AI continues to evolve, but it's not going to evolve as rapidly or as well as we would like if it does not have just and reasonable access to a non-discriminatory network.
Net neutrality plug to close us out. I appreciate it. Tom, thank you for joining us on Politico Tech.
Stephen, great to talk to you.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. See you back here tomorrow.